You're listening to The Good.
Don't call me Paino.
The Bad.
Absolute.
And The Rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Hask. I don't know what that means.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a very, very warm welcome to a special edition of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with Vodafone, coming to you from Bannockburn Rugby Club in Bonnie, Scotland! You can tell so much about how the night is going to go from the first cheer of the evening, and we're in for a good one tonight. So, ladies and gents, we've had a really, really good day in Bannockburn as part of the Vodafone Lions Legacy Tour. Let's have a cheer for Vodafone, who've helped us put today on. And everybody who follows The Good, The Bad and The Rugby by now will know that Vodafone are essentially helping the British and Irish Lions support grassroots clubs' return to rugby. And everyone in this room tonight will know just how important that is after a pretty horrible couple of years. We've had a brilliant day. We arrived nice and early. The sun has been in the sky throughout, which is pretty rare in this part of the world. Couple, even in March, we've got sunburn in the front row. You can take the kids out of Scotland, but you can never get Scotland out of the kids. So we have been coaching the minis today, and Hask did extremely well not to make them cry. So that in itself was a minor victory. Well done to Harriet and Casey, who I want to give a shout out, who are brilliant. Milo and Jack as well. Some brilliant, brilliant kids here at Bannockburn, absolutely giving it their all. We've had an epic crossbar challenge. Well done to the British Army Scotland. I don't know if we've got any of them here today. They've gone, so let's boo British Army Scotland. They came, they saw, they conquered, they've gone elsewhere. They did a very good job on the crossbar challenge. We watched Bannockburn ladies beat Clydebank and Paisley. In an absolute thriller as well. It went down to the wire, and well done to the Bannockburn ladies. Some brilliant performances in that one. We had a good, rough, tough afternoon for the men. It was not quite the victory we were looking for, but we'll give a cheer to the Bannockburn boys as well. And well done to our very own Lord Mike Tindall, who got his boots back on at the age of 79, still running crash ball lines at 79. A cheer for the Lord, please, ladies and gents. Absolutely brilliant. And that's been the really fun stuff as well. We've also been involved in some really interesting workshops. We got the champagne corks flying through the sky already. It's going to be that type of night. And they're also, Vodafone, developing a resource on their V-Hub, which is going to help the club, and in fact, all clubs across the UK and Ireland. It's going to help small businesses develop their digital capabilities following the pandemic. It's going to be sponsorship advice and financial advice, social media advice, etc. It's going to really help you guys go to the next level, which is what everyone in this part of the world wants to see. So we'll have another cheer, please, for Vodafone and all of the partners who pulled this together. And a brilliant big up and thanks to Canterbury as well, who are going to provide new kits for the club as well. So that is brilliant. Good on them. Right, I can tell you this is going to be a much better show if we fill these seats. So without further ado, let's bring up two of the sort of homegrown talent in this part of the world. They've got over 100 caps between them. It's a real pleasure to have with us tonight the former Scotland captain and Saracens fly half, Lisa Martin, and 55 caps, 20 tries, and a British and Irish Lion, ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Seymour! Welcome to the stage, Lisa and Tommy. Tommy, welcome up as well. So if I can sit you two there. And ladies and gents, I know there's a bit of history in this part of the world between Scotland and England. I think 700 years of it or so. But if I can ask you to park that for tonight and give an uproarious welcome, please, to the Lord and Hask. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Tindall and James Haskell! This is where we need the Death March music from Star Wars. Hask, you're on the end. Do you want a drink or not? Do you want a drink? Well done. How are you? Well done.
I ended up having to run around against a load of 23-year-olds, like army people who were massive. So, yeah.
Good.
And took. I think they were out to get me as well. That was very mean of them.
Yeah.
Well, so I think they heard smashed in the back quite regularly.
You did. You got put over the hoardings a couple of times. I saw you get rolled by their seven a couple of times.
What a great day that was. I don't really watch rugby, but I watched that shit.
That seven was on one.
Yeah. I think he got yellow carded in the end, so, you know, he got his comeuppance. It's been lovely to have you with us as well. You did a bit of crossbar challenge. You've taken skills sessions as well. Unfortunately, these two can't help much with the skills, so it's nice to have you in that regard. But just a brilliant day in the sunshine, what club rugby should all be about.
Yes, thank you, Anne Bannockburn, for having me. It's been a great day, as you've rightly alluded to. Sun's out, a lovely bunch of people. These two gentlemen on my right, this lovely lady on my left. So, yeah, very good day.
Good. It's very nice to have you here. You're a bit of a late, fashionably late to arrive.
Always, as always.
But you get a sense of what this club is all about just from the welcome tonight, don't you?
I mean, yeah, it's been a fantastic welcome. You know, and I've been seeing stuff that's been on Instagram as well, kind of watching from afar, being pretty jealous. Happy, you know, Tommy's been holding up the Scottish end of it all. So, yeah, doing us proud.
Well done, you. No tears in the mini rugby today, as we said. Particularly from you, which earlier this morning
was
a danger.
It was hard because they were rubbish. I'm joking. Well, I'm not joking. They were awful. But I... And even then, I said to you, I said, come round. I said, you know, how do you think we did then out of 10? And they went zero, right? They even graded themselves. Oh, well, that's harsh. I'll give you 5. But I was lying and my nose grew. And I actually turned to the parents and went, is it too late for them to take up another sport? Thinking that they were all going to go, ha, ha, ha. They just went, you've misread the crowd. But no, I love it. There was
you've never done that before.
I know. But the beauty is, I'm not ever coming back here again. So if you don't like me, who cares? All right, relax. I'll come back. You know. But it was great. Obviously, listen, I love mini sections are so important for every club, you know, and just to see them like just running around completely oblivious to what was going on. I mean, I was trying to tell them to teach them to tackle. I mean, it was a sort of tackling they were doing, a lot of hugging, a lot of just falling over. I said, listen, make a tackle on your left shoulder. They didn't know the left or the right. It was a very complicated day. But yeah, listen, it was great.
I didn't know
my left and my right. The thing is, when you're talking to kids, you're like, no, tack on the left shoulder. Run on that side. No, you're right. No, you're right. And you're there going, oh my God, this is awful. But they were brilliant. And I think the very fact that this club's got such a strong mini section is so important because, you know, most of us grew up playing grassroots rugby and that experience, it teaches you so much about kind of acceptance, playing with other people, leadership, putting things before yourself, having a bit of fun and laughter. And I think that so many kids don't get opportunity, and the fact you've got such a strong mini section is brilliant. And obviously now some world-class coaches who have... I think I've set them back for years, if I'm honest with you.
We actually put Haskey in there today because he's going to be a dad in August.
Wait, it works. It was a surprise to me as well.
You've got a lot to learn.
I have.
You've got
I
a
have.
Lot to learn.
I have, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's going to be an interesting roller coaster, that. You know, because last time we actually did a coaching session at Dungannon in Northern Ireland, and I was coaching a little minis game, and, you know, there was a bit of a steward's inquiry after I yellow carded a couple of five-year-olds, but... Listen, discipline, you know, you've got to teach them early. So they didn't let me do that today, just a little bit of coaching. And there's a few tears, people had to go home, parents were fighting. But listen, you know, today there was nothing like that.
Good on you, well done. I'm interested to know where it started for both of you two, because you were born in Memphis, is that right?
Well,
or is not?
Not quite. Nashville, right. Yeah, just Nashville. Outside Nashville, yeah, not far.
Right. So how the hell do you go from Nashville... to play
via
for Scotland,
Dubai, yeah.
Via Dubai.
I was
yeah.
a little penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Were you banished to Scotland as a punishment? Joking. Relax.
Welcomely adopted, Hats.
Immediately comes
adopted.
Back to the audience.
Sorry, I was wearing a kilt earlier. Relax.
Can I just say, the more you boo him, the stronger he gets. It's like a force field. Yeah. You need to be
not
very
my
careful.
Tonight.
Go on.
No, so yeah.
But you came to it quite late as well, didn't you? Relatively.
Yeah, I would have been 12, early teens, really. Yeah. I mean, I didn't go to a big school. It was Ulster, sort of Northern Ireland, I found rugby, so to speak. 12, 13, I probably would have taken it up. But to be honest, because I'd been my sort of younger years, to that point had been other sports, basketball, football. Rugby really wasn't in my sort of in my mindset at that point, so I just kind of did everything else outside. And then eventually got to a point, as most people get to, where it's like, right, Saturdays are now taken up with your school sport or doing something else inside. So yeah, that's rugby took over probably when I was around 14, 15, to be honest.
It was really weird. As we've spoken a number of times, we've actually worked together, I think, at Sky as well. I've never noticed in your accent there is Scotland, Belfast and American, and it's sort of it's like Neapolitan and ice
just
cream.
Trying to fit in wherever I am.
It's really discombobulating.
So I'm just waiting for everyone to read them and then go, I'll switch into this.
Yeah, changing codes.
So, yeah.
What was your story into the sport? How did you find your way into...
To be fair, I was kind of a bit of a sporty child, probably a tomboy, as we'd probably all call it. Did a bit of gymnastics, basketball, football, you name it. I probably tried it at least once. Tried ballet once, got told swiftly never to come back. So, started when I was about 7. My dad took me along to a vocal club just down at Portobello and basically was like, daycare, take care of her. She's too hyper, just get rid of her for a while. Ever since then, been absolutely taken by it. And yeah, same as kind of Tommy, I kind of took it pretty seriously when it got to about 14, 15, I think, was the kind of first little bit of internationals I started doing at that age group, and that was kind of my road from then on in, to be honest.
Good on you. And it's from then it's just done that?
Yeah, done that. Had a slight plateau every now and then, but, you know, most people have a bit of that with injuries and so on. But yeah, ever since then, it's kind of just grown arms and legs and just taking me places to see people and stuff. It's basically defined who I am.
That's brilliant to hear. We're going to get a lot more into your story and Tommy's story as well as we go throughout the course of this. But obviously we're talking about minis and we're talking about the importance of grassroots clubs. I just want to ask you about the Minch, because Tins is still trotting around for his local club and you've done some really nice footage this week, actually. You've got the cameras down there and there's a real problem. It's been really interesting actually coming up here this weekend, because we were at a club yesterday in Edinburgh, which was packed. It was really vibrant. New clubhouse, looking really good, going really well. And obviously Bannockburn, I know the numbers are growing. You've got huge plans for the next 10 years. But there are a couple of challenges in England at the moment around playing numbers. So you've done a bit of activity around back in the game.
In the game is just, you know, obviously with COVID and everything, it's decimated so many grassroots sports, not just rugby, everyone. What you've lost is those guys who were probably coming close to the end, maybe didn't play every week, and then they're two years away. I think you said something like the numbers are down.
I think they've gone from about 260 to 90,000. I mean, that's a hell of a
that's
drop.
That's a lot. And so what we're trying to do is trying to get those guys that are now, well, I haven't played for 2 years, I don't need to go back, trying to get them back in and not, you don't have to go and play every week, but be around the club. I mean, Minchin Hampton's a great example.
Couple in.
Oh, yeah. there's the wine guys who have drunk far too much of their own product.
I thought it was indigestion for a moment. I was going to get the defibrillator out.
It was lurch. Well,
Jason's known as Shrek, so we've got such a strong mini section off the back of it. But now we've got girls, we've got a specialised girls team on the Sunday, and then we're always trying to increase the number of women that we have, because I think that's really important. It was great to see the girls playing out there today.
Well done, the ladies.
Because in a realistic point of view, the biggest obstacle for anyone coming down and playing rugby is mum's worried about them getting injured or not actually seeing what club rugby brings, the social side of it, the discipline that has talked about, and including the women to be playing, and it means they'll stay at the club longer, the kids will stay at the club longer, more kids will be exposed to rugby, and further down the line it makes rugby a stronger sport. So we need to get behind women's rugby and drive it forward.
Do you think there's more growth in the women's game at the moment than the boys? Are you seeing, obviously you've played France, you're playing in England at the moment, obviously captained your country up here. I mean, the journey that your sport has been on since you've been involved in it, how would you measure that?
Oh, it's been astronomical. I don't think there's a way to properly measure the impact it's having. You know, when I first started, you basically had to pay your way to be part of everything, you know, hand-me-downs, this and that, you know, it was just a bit of a side thing, oh yeah, you play on a Sunday, kind of take what you're given. Whereas now, instead of being grateful for things, we're asking for more, because we want to have better platforms to show what is possible. You know, I remember growing up, this all sounds so tacky, but I remember growing up being like, I want to be the first woman to play for the Scotland's men's team, because I had no idea Scotland had a women's team, like ever, at all. But now to be able to show young kids and get noticed or whatever and be like, you know, this is a possible avenue, is huge, and I think it's only going to continue growing off the back of, you know, World Cup qualifications and everything like that. So I think it is growing, and it's going to continue to grow and get bigger and bigger as well.
Should we have a cheer for the All of Scotland ladies? Well done, the ladies. I'm going to Rugby World Cup 2021, taking place this year, of course.
I'm just saying, though, it's simple crowd pleaser. Obviously, the girls are loud as hell, so all you have to do is
so
talk
easy.
About me. Girls rugby in Scotland's the best. Win! Win the crowd over.
The best thing is it's like going back 20 years. The girls' table is generally the rowdiest. I did Sutton Coldfield, but it was their centenary. Girls' table, the loudest, most drunk.
Good honour. If only we could get the men's game back. So, one of the things that's been really interesting about this Vodafone Lions Legacy Tour that we've been on is that every club we've been to so far has had a different focus. And the really sort of special thing about Bannockburn is the association with the vets. Now, normally, when you talk about vets, you're thinking of people who are 85, still trundling around in their kit from the 1960s, still doing a job. But actually, the really special thing here is that the vets that we're referring to are much more around the Army, Navy, and RAF veterans and those who are still serving. I know we've got a number in the room, so now it's time for you to make a bit of noise. If you're a vet or your military association, let's have a cheer tonight, please. And a cheer for our military as well. And the reason that we're here is that Bannockburn have an incredible veterans programme to help men and women transition out of the forces and into civilian life. And we all know that rugby clubs are so much the heart and soul of the communities around us. They're the place where we come to play, exercise, socialise, to look after our mental health, to make buds and to make really, really good times as well. We are going to talk more about this a little bit later on, particularly with the gent who's had such an impact at this club, the one and only Jimmy Samuel, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy and the women. Jimmy, we're looking forward to having a chat with you in a moment or two. Don't need to say any more. He's even blushing. You can't really tell because he's got a big old beard, but he is blushing. But I actually want to have a few minutes because just talking about rugby and its association with the military, because you do Help for Heroes at the moment.
Rugby for Heroes.
Rugby for Heroes.
Apologies. Jimmy was just talking about, yeah.
Oh, wait, yeah. Why do you do it?
Look, I think rugby's always been closely linked with the military, mainly through boot camps that we do, pre-season training tours. It sort of builds the same bonds between the players. It's not to the literal way in terms of you have to perhaps sacrifice your life like the military guys do, but on the field, you're going to bust your balls for the guy to your left and to your right, and without him, you're nothing. Without you, he's nothing. And it has that sort of the respect, the honour, the work rate, that all ties in. It's why, you know, Clive back in the early 2000s took us down to Limston. We did loads of stuff down with the SBS, and their job was to try and get rid of any dickheads, or he called them time wasters. So we should actually thank him. Best thing Clive ever did. It meant Austin Healey didn't get in that World Cup squad. So it was genius.
Do you remember, just thinking about it, so in 2007, we were supposed to go to Portugal, right? And they loaded us on a bus. And we're like, oh, something doesn't smell right. And we thought it was one of the front row. Because it normally is, you know, their hygiene's like an afterthought for front row. Yes. It's just a fact of life, isn't it? Oi, don't argue with me, just have a shower, right? So we got on this bus, and we ended up turning up at pool and doing some stuff with the SBS, right? They were very standoffish. It was the first time any team had ever worked with the SBS. Obviously, the SES, you had your Andy McNabs and guys like that who'd shone a bit of a light on the SF stuff. But the SBS never really worked with anyone. So very standoffish, and I remember we got put into teams, and I got put in a team with Ronnie Regan. You know, Ronnie Regan, English, you got right, Bab, everything okay, don't worry about that, right? Thick as porridge, right? And he, I just remember this thing going about, like, you come out of these things thinking you're going to have a really good learning experience. I never forget that we were on the beach, and you had to do these boat carries, right? So we had this team, and the idea is four men carrying these boats, other guys would run behind. When you got tired, you'd shout, swap in. Well, so I got it, young buck. I was only, 21 at the time. Got on there, Fraser Waters, Johnny Wilkinson, a couple of other people, and we're there running along. And Ronnie Regan's running behind, about 200 metres behind, right? And we're running, and the SBS guys got really upset because Ronnie isn't joining in, and he's carried it. And Ronnie's gone, here, ask, swap in, Bab, swap in, right? So I've gone, all right, 30 seconds later, swap out, ask, swap out, right? So we're running along, and we're coming nearly last, right? And as we're running, we go past this fence post, and the team in front of us was Tom Palmer, Lawrence Dallio, Simon Shaw, guys, right? And suddenly, as they're running past this fence post, their canoe shears off them, right? Swings round at 90 degrees, takes the whole team out, and the third place team, and we run past them. And all I could hear was Ronnie Reed going, "Here, espionage, Bab, espionage," right? And I was like, "Why?" I mean, first of all, I didn't know he knew a word that long, but I was like, "What do you mean, Ronnie?" He goes, "Espionage." Each boat had a bailer on a string for emptying water out. As he'd gone past, he'd lashed their bailer round the fence post, and it had swung the whole thing, right? So he'd taken them out, I was like, "Espionage," right? So anyway, we're running along. Ronnie is out of breath. He's wheezing like a kettle. Honestly, people thought, fucking hell, tea's ready. Just, we get towards the finish line, right? And I'm blowing, we're carrying this thing. And Ronnie goes, "Swap in, Bab, swap in." And I didn't really think. I said, "Yes," I swapped in. Ronnie carries the thing over the line, right? Brian Ashton, coach right there. It's like, "Ronnie, unbelievable fitness," right? I'm bleeding out my arse. I just can't tell you. "Haskell, you need to do better than that if you want to be in this team." I was like, "Damn you." It was the most professional bit of work from any man I've ever seen. And it's like, when you talk about these moments, that's all I ever think about.
Oh, man, to that. Never got over it either.
Am I right in saying you've got military links in your family?
Yeah, well, I think that's everyone to a degree, one removed or whatever it is, has links to the military. I think that's why it is so vital and so important in terms of the way we look at it. My grandfather, my mum's side, was World War II vet. And the weird thing about it is everyone has their different passages, I suppose, within it. But he talked about it very, very little. Obviously, you hear about some people, and he was naturally very proud, but when we were kids and even when we were older into our teens, and he lived into his 90s, he only passed relatively recently, it wasn't one of those things that he ever liked discussing. Now, we knew he won medals, and it was just something he never liked talking about. And I think it's naturally, I was obviously so proud, and you are when your family member is, but in terms of my ability to explore that part of his life, which would have been such a huge part of his life, he was never open to discussing it. So I think naturally, I hold it, as everyone does, in the highest of regard. But for me, it's, I suppose it's that little bit of a candle within our family that I've never truly been able to see in the full light, shall we say.
And likewise, for you, Lisa?
Yeah, actually, both my mum and dad were in the RAF. It's actually kind of how they met as well. So my dad speaks about where he's kind of been. It's kind of taken him around the world. But again, same as Tommy, there's certain things that he won't speak about and won't really mention, but he still sees that time of his life as something that really defined him and really took him then places as well. Went from the RAF to then being in the whiskey distillery. Apparently that was similar for him. But yeah, no, it's definitely run the family. Like, cousins have been in the Navy. One of my second cousins worked on Britannia, so got a little sneaky tour of that when it was at Ocean Terminal for a while. So yeah, it's definitely been a part that I've looked into as well, being like, "Oh, I might want to look down that route." Was swiftly told it's the RAF or nothing. So then swiftly walked out the door again. Really similar values to rugby in terms of it, you have a place to belong. It's part of your family. It's somewhere where you can look around and see brothers, sisters who have got the same values and same thoughts as you, and have that bond that doesn't break, that you can, you know, look at them down the line, give them all you look, and they know no words really need to be said at that point, because you remember, yeah, we've gone through that together. And yeah, I think it's an occupation, it's a job that, you know, I have the highest respect for anyone who goes down that path.
Good on you. You had a centenary.
I mean I'm looking good if I did. My great uncle Roy was a commando in World War II. Landed in the D-Day landings. He turned 100 the other day.
Good on him.
And it's one of those things I think is really interesting what Jimmy's done with the club here. And actually, Jimmy's had more tours than a 18 to 30 rep in Butlins. I've never heard so much. He's a very humble man for what he's done. But I think it's interesting when you live in the public eye or play sport, people sort of put you on a pedestal and they talk about you as being, you know, hero, mate, you're a legend, mate, you're hero, whatever they hyperbole they use. But actually, you very rarely, you know, we talk about going into battle on the field, but it's just incomparable. You know, you've got people putting themselves in harm's way for our safety, that people put themselves And sacrifice such large portions of their life to defend our freedom to do things that other people aren't prepared to do. And I think when I looked at my great uncle, you know, we lots of generations have moved on. We're obviously going through something at the moment. And I just think it brings back the fact that these people were prepared to sacrifice. They truly are heroes. They truly do things that not many people can do. They live with these scars. And remember, like back in the day, you know, there was no such thing as PTSD. There was no such thing as talking about stuff. Everyone just put it in and wrapped it up. And I think when you're actually making that level of sacrifice, that level of commitment, that level of discipline, and also remember that even with that special forces stuff, you talk about these kind of people as being, you know, the elite of the elite, but they do it through training, through camaraderie, through teamwork, through sacrifice for each other. And when you're taken out of that, the real world could be quite a daunting place. And when I went down to see Roy for his kind of his birthday, you know, for him to get piped in, because when he landed on the beach, I think it was the King's, I'm not sure the exact details, but the King's Piper played him in, so he was piped into this to this ceremony. And to see so many people coming there, he had more medals than anyone I've ever seen, you know, and just a humble guy doing what he did. And I think when people are called upon to make those sacrifices, a few people, you know, stand up and be counted. And I think that's very special. I think in a world of where we've put influencers on pedestals and false idols, there actually are some genuine people doing some genuine shit. And I think it deserves to be recognised. I think what the guys do at the club here, giving people another opportunity, giving people a chance to try something and experience something, for me is the best. And they really are the heroes, you know.
Good. Can we have a cheer for Great Uncle Roy? Will you two move up one? Please don't stop cheering. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome up to the stage the great Jimmy Samuel.
You guys.
Jimmy, you've been an absolute star. You've gone up in my estimation tonight because you're wearing an Alan Partridge blazer as well with a deep maroon. The Bannockburn colours. Thank
we
you,
we'd demo them tonight.
That is always one of the great things about sort of grassroots clubs is blazers, fines. I saw people getting fined and putting their dropping their money in the power down, gonna get fined. Fucking come on then. You know, I just think that's what makes it special. It's that sort of stuff that, you know, Mitchell Hampton's got a need for tweed, everything's got to be tweed. It's just that keeps people on it and keeps people disciplined, and otherwise you can get loose and it can all drift apart. And
but you get some naughty characters. Obviously got Jimmy, hero, got Krusty in the van, unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? Every club has some unbelievable characters, and I think that's what makes the world go round. And I absolutely love just looking around a room.
Jimmy, you're a ledge. We've had such a good day today at your club. How much fun has this been? How good is it to see the room packed, the good people in good form, and your good self having put a really good effort together?
It's amazing. You know, to see a room full of faces from everyone, from the club, from other clubs around the area, which is great to see. And the whole day has been really excellent, you know, from the minis stuff in the morning all the way through seeing the Valkyries run out, which is play to the crowd.
People pleaser.
quick learner.
It's that
quick
woman learner. Again, honestly, you can hear her. Only dogs and cats can hear her when she reaches that level.
She said earlier that everyone loves my loud voice, and everyone was like...
Absolutely not. I've now got tinnitus.
But yeah, I mean, and you know, the men's game, it was a tough game, and you know, I put it together for them, but I know the boys will go into it. I know the boys will never let me down. The boys absolutely dug in blind, put their bodies on the line, like they always do every week. And it was great to see. And it's
Thanks, mate.
So, Jimmy, Hask mentioned your tours. Tell me if I've got this wrong. Bosnia, Kosovo 3 times, Iraq 3 times, Afghanistan 3 times. Have we left anything out of that?
Afghan twice,
okay.
Oi, Benidorm 3 times, Cyprus, Tenerife, Ayia Napa.
You've been a busy boy, obviously, but tell me a little bit about your story before Bannockburn came along. Tell me about you.
I mean, I joined the army in 1995, which, when I say it, I think that was about 10 years ago. Clearly not 10 years ago, so, yeah, you know, many moons ago, stood on the train station back in Bedford, a young 16-year-old, and I thought, this is me, I'm gonna go and drive helicopters and fly tanks, you know? obviously a little bit and a few tours in the way, but yeah, the last 26 years have been such a journey, whether it was Afghan, Iraq, Bosnia, you know, Kosovo. I went to Kosovo with my now wife, you know.
Tell me a little bit about how rugby was there for you, I suppose, when you made the decision to leave the army, and how difficult it is to come out of the army and back into, I mean, you called it normal life earlier.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose I called it normal life. So there was two reasons I made the decision, excuse me, to leave the military. The first one was Bannockburn Rugby Club, right? So...
Say to the crowd.
At the park, again.
But the reason is not necessarily worried about the scores or the results. What we care about is providing that opportunity for everyone to be the best version of yourself physically, mentally, and be a shining light in the community. You know, that's what Bannockburn is for me. And we cater to lots of minority groups. You know, we don't care if you're black, white, gay, straight. We don't care if you're male, female, young, old, or economic. Whatever group you come from, we don't care. And the veterans is a minority group. You know, I say this to soldiers and they're like, well, you can hear them cool. But we are, because we come from such a niche society. And when I left the military a year ago, I actually got out. I went through a bit of a time, to be honest, you know, a really low time. And it could only probably be grief. You know, that's what it was. I got upset. I threw a cheeseburger at a wall, just insight into my anger issues, you know. And I sat in my car and I cried because I didn't know who I was anymore. Because for the last 26 years, I'd been Sig Samuel, Corporal Samuel, Sergeant Samuel, Captain Samuel, and I was defined essentially by the stripes I wore on my chest or the pips on my shoulder. And all of a sudden I was like, so who am I now? Am I director of rugby? Am I James Samuel, Jimmy Samuel? I didn't really know. And there's two things that helped me through. The first one was my missus, Cameron and Sydney, my kids, because they recognised me and they were like, Jim, we can see you struggling, you know, so let's give you a hand. And the second one was a rugby club. I would have never left the army without this rugby club. So I went to another club first, and then I eventually migrated over to Bannockburn because here I found a set of values and standards that I live by my whole life. Selfless commitment, respect for others, loyalty, integrity, discipline, and courage. And today's been great. And you guys, I am truly thankful for you giving us the opportunity. But everything today has been done on the back of volunteers. And it's that those set of values that allowed me to... I mean, I had the support of my family, that's fine. But it's that experience I thought, you know what, I can walk away from the military because I've got my community here. I've got people that will listen to me. And I've turned up to training and gone, guys, I've had a shit day today. But you know what, I run around with my mates, I have a good time, I watch the women run out, I watch the blokes run out, and I feel all right. So for me, I just want to give that opportunity to other veterans to say, look, sport, like you said, Tins, in particular rugby, because it's the same, like James was saying, you have to put your body on the line, you have to put yourself in a dangerous situation for your mates. And it's the closest thing I can find, or I found, to being able to transition and give me a soft landing out of the military, where we can grow and just be that club, where we can sit in a big room and just get on it after a game of rugby.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Samuel. Superstar. Jimmy, we'll let you get another beer. Give an enormous round of applause to the heartbeat of the club. Good on you, Jimmy. Well done, my friend.
A rightful standing ovation. What every club needs is a Jimmy Samuel, and it's fantastic to hear how much Bannockburn means to Jimmy and how much Jimmy obviously means to all of you good people here. I want to ask just a few rugby bits and bobs. So I do want to say congratulations to Scotland's women who are off to Rugby World Cup 2021.
Have you spoken to a few of the girls, the team, the relief, delight? Where are the emotions? Because it's been quite a journey there, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been probably, it's been 12 years now since Scotland were last represented in the World Cup. So yeah, I've spoken to a few of the girls. It was a pretty whirlwind day when they all landed. Obviously went straight to BT Murrayfield, got to go in the field and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's been this weight that's now off their back, and it's now given them freedom now to actually express themselves on the world stage and really show how far they've come as individuals, as a group, and they're really looking forward to getting stuck into to some of the world's best, like New Zealand, Australia, and obviously Wales as well in there. So it's going to be a big ask, but I think they are absolutely buzzing to have this opportunity.
Can I ask you about your hopes? Obviously, former Scotland captain, I know it's not where you want it to be right now. Are you at peace with that? Are you itching to show what you can do once again? Where are you at with the journey to New Zealand?
Obviously, I'd love to be part of it. You know, it's the pinnacle of any international player's career. They want to be able to be at that World Cup. I did used to be a bit of a bitter old woman about it all and be like, oh, I should be there, whatever. But now I'm kind of at peace with it in terms of I'm big enough, old enough, wise enough, ugly enough to know when and when I don't fit into things. And, you know, if it happens, it happens. I'll be more than grateful for it. And I will continue to put my everything into that. But if it doesn't happen, I will be that squad's absolute biggest cheerleader and backing them the whole way. So, yeah, whatever happens, happens. And, yeah, if I'm on the plane, fabulous.
When you spoke to the coach said, listen, you're not part of the plans at the moment. Do they give you, like, feedback and stuff to work on? What do they say to you, you need to do? Have you got a clear idea every time you go out for Saracens what you need to do?
Yes and no. It was more sort of about who I was perceived as a person. And I'm not one that's going to go and try and fit a mould of and, you know, be a person that, you know, is not me. But yeah, still every time I put on a sari shirt, it is still a goal of I'm going to put the best out there, best performance, get that video clip in, and that's the only thing I can control. His opinion on me is his opinion. Everyone has them, and they're like arseholes. They're sometimes good, sometimes bad. So yeah, there is a bit of feedback there, but at the end of the day, I go off the feedback that I get from my coaches week in, week out, who see me play and train and know what I'm about. So yeah.
I don't know who wrote your media handbook, but whoever it is, I want that given to every player in every sport across the country.
You can't be true, what can you be?
You're absolutely right. And you're on a plane tomorrow morning. Tell us a little bit about the Saris life and the Saris club. And I mean, that you the commitment you make is remarkable, but there has to be a reason for it.
Yeah, so I am living up here in just along the Bowness. So yeah, I'll be on a flight tomorrow down to play against Sale. I am playing down London, training up here in Scotland with a local men's club. Saracens were a club that were there for me when the coaches, management team were there when others kind of doubted me, didn't think I'd do it, didn't think I'd be playing. They thought I'd be playing twos rugby down there, didn't believe why I went there, but Saracens have helped me more so as a person than as a player, so I feel I have that loyalty to them in terms of if they come calling, I'll answer that call straight away because I know that they look after that whole person. Most people's commute to training is usually only about half an hour. Mine's is about 340 miles. So yeah, glutton for punishment and ability to say no,
but playing for a hell of a team.
Yeah, playing for a hell of a team.
I want to ask you about Lions, but I also want to ask you about touring with this man alongside, because the story is always the same, which is, thought he was going to be a dick and absolutely love him. And that's where absolutely most people net out.
Please just say, thought he was a dick. He was a dick. That's what everyone wants to hear.
Let's do Lions first of all, because everything that you achieved in the game, which was substantial, 2017 and wearing the red shirt, sits where?
I mean, easy answer would be way, way up there. If not at the pinnacle. I think, look, it's a cliche answer, but everyone that plays rugby in a professional sense, you know, in Ireland and the British Isles, one day they dream of putting on, you know, the red shirt, not Wales.
We can all agree on that.
No, but look, yeah, look, it was, as I said, cliche answer, dream come true. So incredibly special, something that I never in my wildest dreams thought I would do. Incredibly honoured, but listen, it was a hell of a ride, and made all the better, probably leading on to your second question, by, although it's painful probably for me to say it and for everyone maybe to hear it, but for that man, two steps to my right.
Why?
Just I think he's rightly alluded to on your podcast on many of occasion. When you were in the midweek team, or as he quickly donned us the midweek or the mixed veg, and I'll never forget the time when he brought that
in front of Gatland, and Gatland laughed about it, and then we all knew, oh, fuck, we are. But just, I think when you get in that place where you know, look, this is where I am, and you still remain, because you're a professional, ever hopeful that there may be a sniff, someone might get injured, or you might have a stormer in one of the games, and it might give you an opportunity, but you know probably your cloth's been cut, and you need energy givers, you need guys that can really, and that's not to say it wouldn't have still been a special experience, of course it would have, but guys like Hask, who, as we've all seen tonight, hell of a storyteller, gets a room together, you know, has a lot of stories and a lot of good ones. He for me was, again, pains for me to say it, a real highlight for me. It was an honour to be with him on that tour and to play with him.
Good on you.
Does he get a cheer?
He does.
He's not all bad.
Do you know what? I've never asked you before. Is where were you when you found out? And do you did you always expect to go?
No.
Or were you jaw on floor?
No, genuinely jaw on the floor. This is truthful, and no one believes when I say it. I was at lunch. Generally, I didn't watch the announcement, so I had a prior engagement to go for lunch with Richie Vernon. And we were there. You go, yeah. And we were having lunch together, and he kind of said to me, "He's like, are you sure?" Because we'd rearranged, and he said, "Are you sure you want to?" Because it's, and I was like, "No, it's best. I just don't want to. I don't even want to think about it." I didn't think I was going anywhere, and it was kind of one of those things where you're going, "Well, I don't think to, but I know probably my name's in the hat, obviously, because I played in the Six Nations. So, but I just want to avoid it." And funny enough, it was Ali Price and potentially Finn. I'm not entirely certain who were sort of two or three tables over. And Ali, funny enough, was watching on his phone, and it was him, I suppose, making eye contact with Richie, watching the announcements on Sky Sports, that kind of, I suppose, through osmosis-type feedback, got it to me that I'd been picked, and then that was it. Yeah.
So it just sort of was Chinese whispers with a bit of a...
A little bit, yeah.
Really?
A little bit, yeah. And so it was, yeah.
The emotions?
Different. Just really couldn't believe it. Genuinely couldn't believe it. It was... a rush of various different emotions, people. Then your phone starts going crazy and you get whisked off to Murrayfield to do the announcement. And naturally, of course, Hoggy was there. And it was just a crazy, crazy time, to be quite honest, and something that will live in my memory, thankfully, very, very fondly.
Good on you. You're a lion. No one can ever take that away from either of you.
Is there something different about meeting up with Lions again?
I mean, I think there's definitely something different about meeting up with the Midweek Veg again. I think... You don't understand it until you're in it, but actually, when you get on a tour like that, the people who are going to be on the test side, it becomes pretty clear. You know, the number one thing coaches say is they hand out bibs and they go, "Don't read anything into it." And you're like, pretty sure that's a test team you picked there. Anything can play for. Well, why are they going off on a separate bus? So you turn up in New Zealand, and then, you know, from my perspective, when I walk into a room or I meet people, you immediately, the people I haven't met before, you immediately see their body language tighten. There's a bit of an intake of breath. They're like, "Oh, fuck, here comes this dickhead." You can see them like, "I want to hate him." Like, we've had so many people on the podcast going, "I wanted to punch him in the face." And I got on with him. And actually, as soon as I met Tommy, he was lovely. We said hello. I think we actually went for a couple of coffees on our own, just used to meet up and go and have a... go and sit down and have a little sap and a chat. And because you're training at odd hours... You know, I've said it many times, Steve Borthwick was huge on that tour because he put so much detail and love into that midweek team. If he hadn't done that, we didn't really get the attention to detail that we probably deserved. Yet we had to, they hadn't won a game until we played, I think it was the Chiefs. And we need to get this tour because it could have horrifically gone like a, you know, we could have lost everything. You know, so to get on the road against the Chiefs, to get that win was really kind of special. And for us to be able to have that then freedom where you've got almost got nothing to lose and you've got, you know, your Dan Coles, your Rory Bests, your Tommy Seymour, you know, myself, Ian Henderson, I can't understand a word he was saying. You've got this kind of mix of players there and you've got a certain role to fulfil. It's fun. And when you see guys, you're like... Do you know what? We trained together, we worked together, we supported as best we could, and we had such a laugh doing it. And that's the one thing I think about rugby and life in general. You only get one go at it, and apologise if some of you think you're going to be reincarnated or something. You're definitely not. If I'm coming back as anything, it'll be a slug, all right? But if... And you've got to make the most of it. And actually, when we went to New Zealand, all those guys, across the test team, but across the midweek team... just embraced every moment. And that's what I love about seeing a club like this today. You know, every single team making memories, having moments, savouring it, enjoying it. Even if you are a veteran and coming back to being a player, you're having a rebirth, you've just got to enjoy all of it, because there's nothing better than sitting down at a table or seeing Tommy, give him, you know, hug, how are you, mate, and reminiscing on those stories. That's why I love working with you two, because we have so many adventures. We create adventures, you know, last night, you know, just... Yeah, it's just
that's
a good
record.
Yeah, it's off the record. It's just a good fun place to be. So you do have this look, and it's always an honour to be called on the Lions tour. But you need to know your role in life and execute it to the best of your ability.
Amen to that. Profound words from the Hask. I'm going to ask a stupid question, and I know that the table in front of us are going to answer it with just a hoop and holler. Should there be a Lionesses? So the next question is, just before this thing descends into anarchy, the question I do want to ask you is, what does a female Lionesses team look like? Do you play France and New Zealand because they can stack up? Does it have to follow the men and go New Zealand, Australia, South Africa? Is it made of the four home unions?
I think it needs to be probably France, New Zealand. Like you say, they are some of the best teams. They are currently in an international stage. Big future plans would be great to be able to follow the men's ones, but until then I think it needs to be able to show the best product possible, and I think the best product possible is playing those sorts of teams. And again, same around having all four nations there. It's obviously, it's great England leading the way with the contracts and showing how it can be if you properly invest in a team, properly invest in your players, how far that game can go. Obviously Wales are starting that journey now, and it's all about, you know, Scotland and Ireland catching up and seeing what can happen. And I think once there is some equity across all four regions, I think that is when, you know, Lionesses Tour is definitely, you know, a really good thing to keep pushing forward with. But until there is some, you know, really competitiveness between those four nations, I think it's going to be really hard to have a Lionesses team that's not just predominantly your professional players who have the means and the ability to take that proportion of time off of work or away from careers and things.
Yeah, the wheel is in motion, that much is definitely for sure. And obviously well done Canterbury and Vodafone, who are part of the steering group for setting up a Lionesses. It's going to happen.
I was interesting, obviously you had a professional contract in France.
Yeah.
What was it like over there? Why are they trailblazing in comparison to over here?
I think just the way that they publicise the game as well. You know, club games, we would have about 6,000-7,000 at every single home club game with a brass band. It was insane. But it's the way that it's grown from the grassroots. You know, the way that they look at it in terms of the development that they put in at that level, it's serious and it's intense from, you know, a young age. And they put it out on national television, they get the publicity, it's seen as an equal sport in comparison to others in the area. When I was over in France, we were on field training 3 nights a week for 2 hours, and then we were in the gym, we were doing all the extra conditioning. Like, this was seen as something that, you know, the girls base their life around their rugby, whereas in here, rugby sometimes has to fit around our life. So I think that's why France have just got an absolute love and an absolute want for sport, regardless of gender, regardless of who or what it is. They just want to see their teams, their local areas, their national teams doing well and doing successful, and they'll support them regardless of whether they've, you know, they're part of that sport themselves.
Can I just ask you then, is that a federation-driven thing in terms of the, or is that a individual clubs wanting to uplift their own identity and having women's teams, or is it a France federation thing as well that they want to drive the women's leg?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, the club is at the centre and the heartbeat of that town and that area. So everything happens around there on the Saturdays, Sundays. You know, that is where the local area gets together, gets behind their team, their city, their town. And they just, it's just bragging rights, to be honest. They want to see them do well, to then talk to the mate and be like, well, here, we got one over Montpellier, well done. But then it's also then driven by the federation, because they are seen to, they're funding it, they're pushing it out to, you know, there's a bidding war from the TV stations to who gets the France Women's Six Nations matches. Like, people are wanting it, and they are encouraged to keep going for it. But I think it stems from the club and the city and the area, which then the federation then makes even wider and puts on a bigger scale.
Good on them. Keep going across the board in the women's game. There it is again. It really is. It's quite a work of art.
The women are making the right noise. So there you go.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
If you need a champion for anything, that woman on table, whatever,
is available. Do you know, we've been here since 9:15 this morning, and I'm going to say the words for the very first time that I haven't heard them so far today. Shall we have a quick word on the Calcutta Cup? Mixed reaction. I have a Scottish mate, Will, who we bet lunch on the Calcutta Cup, and obviously I'm taking him out for lunch. And but his original email said Scotland for the Grand Slam, question mark. So he emailed back and said, we beat England, I don't care. Is that enough now? Or is there... It is. Good, happy people in the room.
Maybe
it's always a short fix, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Is that enough, or has it got to kick on? Tomorrow?
In my opinion, no. I don't think now. I don't think it's fair to if Scotland as a nation, as a country, have aspirations to start competing for Six Nations trophies, for competitions, then we can't be happy with doing really, you know, short sparks of really insane rugby, or, you know, winning really sort of, I suppose, momentous victories. That can't be where our satisfaction draws a close. It has to be a case of consistency. And I suppose from my perspective, and I know this is funny enough, I think you guys spoke about it, and I can't remember if it was Mike or Hask who spoke about it on your podcast last week when they...
If it was rugby, it wasn't it.
But just...
If it was intelligent, it wasn't Hask.
Just in relation to, you know, with the noise in terms of where Scotland see themselves and how they feel the I suppose the elation that comes around one victory at the start of the Six Nations, you know, being, okay, this is it, this is our year. I don't think truthfully within the camp they view themselves every time they go into a Six Nations that, okay, this is our year, we're going to win it. Of course they'll have a race, because as every union does, they want to go out and win it. But I think the external noise is actually what drives that, oh, Scotland are, you know, Scotland are ahead of themselves, or, you know, they've lost that humble, it's gone. That, to me, is driven from outside noise. But I truthfully believe now that it's a case of, if Scotland really want to start kicking on to the next level, we can't be happy with 1, 2, 3 wins. It's got to be consistency across the board, because realistically, that only gets you so far. You have to, in order to be seen and taken seriously on the next level, it's got to be shit or bust, unfortunately.
Is it coming?
Oh, look, you know, we went into that England game and England were half a point favourites. And if you asked anyone in that stadium, there was a mixed view. I'd say it was pretty much down the line who was going to win that game. And it came down to the 83rd minute, last play of the game, that, you know, completely illegal turnover by...
Get over it.
come on.
Darcy Graham.
I generally don't care.
He's learning.
Cheating bastard. Yeah.
Despicable. Yeah. No, look, it came down... But I want the games to go to the wire. We want to see games that go into the 84th minute, the England-Wales. You know, I'm sat with Jiffy, Jonathan Davis, and he's in the first half, he's going, fucking hell, these boys are shit. And I'm like, Jiffy, they're not shit. He's like, why has he picked him? Second half, he's going, oh, my God, these guys are amazing. You can do it, lads, 85th minute. But that's the beauty of it. I think Scotland now, from 1 to 23, have a world-class 1 to 23. Now, what we saw against France, unfortunately, is if you lose the likes of Watson and then Ritchie and Ferguson wasn't in there, and a few changes up front, I think there were 6, 7 changes, and you're taking on the best team in the world, that's where they don't quite have the depth yet, but that's the only problem they have. If you get your first choice 23, Scotland can beat anyone on their day, and that's the beauty of the top 8 teams in the world right now.
Oh, man, it is very, very tight. Does your mother-in-law ever goad you at Sunday lunch by drinking her Chateau Petrus out of the Calcutta Cup?
No, she invites me over every time, but I do like to remind her of 2011 when I was captain of England and we won the Calcutta Cup and she had to give it to me.
So. Touché.
That, if you ever want to get one over your mother-in-law, you can't beat that. I literally, Anskin was playing and he tackled me and I've snapped something in my ankle and I couldn't walk, and Nick Easter was like, mate, I'll go get the cup. I'm like, fucking will you? That's my mother-in-law. I literally, longest walk up the steps of Twickenham, shaking everyone's hands. Coming in a minute, Mom. Debrief over Sunday lunch. Move on, Michael. She can throw whatever at me. I've always got that in the locker.
So, rounding it up, anyone going to beat France to the title?
No. I don't think so. I mean,
how much do we love the French?
I mean, look,
the French
I love it. First
love
of all,
it. Love it.
No, but France are unbelievable at the moment. First of all, they're playing incredible rugby across the board. They've got that mentality. I think, look, you know, we always talk about the oldest cliche in the book that there's always that ability to self-implode. But actually, I think they've worked so past that. I think the very fact that you've got Sean Edwards, that little Anglo-Saxon mentality, in with the Sheik of Galtier. Ibanez, they just seem on fire. They seem to be enjoying what they're doing. They've got strength in depth. They you know, so much was built in the under-20s. They're now looking fire. And to be honest with you, I think the world is a better place with a strong French side. And as Mike, and you can't underplay what Mike said. Any team in the Six Nations, apart from Italy, can beat anybody on their day.
Just before we... Can we just say as well... You're the new Jerry Maguire of rugby. Yeah. Rugby agent.
No?
Are you enjoying it? Like, are we allowed to talk about this or not? Or do we cut it?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
So you are now a rugby agent, keeping an eye on the young talent coming up on the ranks, no. Keeping an eye on...
Anyone underneath 23, though. So whose fingers on the pulse? Is youngsters. Only in Scotland? So you...
No. Ireland and Scotland, both of them, yeah. Both of them.
And are you any names you're going to throw out there that you think...
No, we'll keep it all under wraps. We'll keep it...
Good.
Keep
otherwise
it
they might come calling.
Yeah. No, listen.
Are you enjoying the life of the agent, though?
Yeah, look, it's still new, still get my feet under the table with it, but I was having a conversation earlier, you know, dealing with the youngsters is great. I'm at the point now where I've just, fallen off the back of my career and getting to see guys at the start of their journey. Professional rugby isn't easy, obviously we all know it, and it's a case of, in my opinion, it's nice to have figures around that, you know, guys at the start of their stage when everything is so new and... everything is coming very thick and fast at them. It's in my opinion, it's important to have these support systems in place. And I have a real sense of pride and value in feeling like I can hopefully add to these guys in a support system type of way. And I think with the youngsters, they're not financial. Of course, they're going to be at some point financially motivated. They wouldn't be trying to do this as a career if not, but the finances is less important.
Yeah.
And they're more about trying to make way into a career that they love and the passion they have for it. And I like playing a small part in the sidelines to it.
Good on you. Giving agents a good name. Well done to you, Tommy Seymour. Right, just before we go, a couple of bits of housekeeping, T's and C's. We're coming back to Scotland on our theatre tour, so if you've enjoyed this shambles tonight, we would love to see you down in Edinburgh. It's the 3rd of May, and we are going to be joined by the one and only Vermish. Hamish Watson is coming along. What a boy. Tickets are on sale now. All the info is on our website. Do check that out if you'd like to. Lisa, thank you so much. Tommy, thank you so much. Tins and Hass, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, an enormous round of applause for our panel tonight. And for the great Jimmy as well. Thank you so much for having us. We've been Jimmy, the good, the bad, and the rugby at Bannockburn RFC on the Vodafone Lions Legacy Tour. We'll see you for our normal podcast later in the week. But for now, Bannockburn, take it away!
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.